For ADD Cast for Saturday, January 14th, 2006. Thanks for staying subscribed, everyone. Welcome to the 13th edition of the ADD cast. This is lucky number 13, which we narrowly avoided doing last night on Friday the 13th.
Woo!
To my right is Mr. Mike Stewart.
What's up?
Being his usual laconic self, but that'll last for about a picosecond. And for those of you who don't know what a picosecond is, look it up. On tap for tonight, I want to talk about the Macworld and CES shows that happened over the last 2 weeks since we've seen each other.
Some interesting announcements.
And talk about your girlfriend.
Yay.
We're going to lead off with getting you in trouble at home.
Oh, about the girlfriend?
Yeah.
Who's pissed off at me for coming here to do this?
Yeah.
Well, that's typical. You know, what else can I say?
So she's under a lot of stress right now because she's doing all this molecular biology shit for work.
Right.
So she's got to basically take these DVDs and stuff them into her brain.
Right. And what it comes down to pretty much is she has a lot of studying to do, but the moment she decides she doesn't need to study and that my presence is needed, it doesn't matter what I'm doing at that particular time. It's just... my presence is required.
So what's the time lag differential? So if you are 10 feet away from her when she stops studying, is that a good distance, or does she want you like 3 feet away?
Oh, definitely right next to.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So pretty much you have to have a sensor to determine when she is close to stopping the study.
That's called the cell phone.
The cell phone.
That's my embedded sensor. So it lets me know.
At that point, it's too late, though. Because you're already out of range.
Yeah, but no, that's true. But if I were out of range, the cell phone would be my sensor. If I was in range, she would just say something.
Oh, okay.
Hey! You know? But it's really... fine.
Get over here and give me pleasure.
Yeah, it's really fine. Okay. I gotta finish up with this, and then of course I think I'm meeting her at Tiffany's or someplace.
Oh man,
ridiculous.
You don't screw around, do you?
No, I know.
Yeah, what's next after that? The Lexus dealer?
No, probably head over to the mall. I'm sure to do some shopping at the same old Bloomingdale's, Williams Sonoma. You know, these certain.
You could take her to the Apple store.
I usually take a little duck into there, believe it or not, knowing my...
Oh, my God.
How much I love apples. No, I always duck in there because there's a lot to like about Apple products, of course.
Yeah.
And I'm... Good segue into talking about apples, but I'm somewhat impressed.
You didn't let me get my idea out for you.
Oh, sure.
I came up with an idea for a service after hearing about Mike's woes. It's basically a shit transferal service. Basically, you hire someone else... to take the shit from your girlfriend or spouse.
It's by proxy.
Yeah. So basically you pay someone to catch all of the nasty shit and then make all the plans for you, and then they call you up and very calmly and politely said, "Dude, she's at a level 6 today. You're going to need a box of chocolates, half a dozen roses, and you're meeting her at 35 minutes at Tiffany's." But they catch all of the anger.
Well, if
now,
that
wouldn't
would work,
you pay money for that?
Yeah, but there's no way that would work because they'd have to look like you, all kinds of stuff.
No, they just have to sound like you.
Or
you could have a computer
generated sensor.
Right. Well, the cell phone, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you have your cell phone forwarded to the service. They have pre-recorded chunks of your voice that they can reassemble into a sentence that sounds just like you.
That'd be pretty funny. Sounds like a movie.
Right. You know, exactly.
Like Booty Call or something.
No. Computerized, man.
I know.
You know, get all the phonetics down so they can say anything they want, and it always sounds natural and conciliatory and calm and relaxing.
Well, I would take it if it existed. I mean, I'm sure there's times I would.
So I'm going to put this idea out in the Creative Commons. If you do this non-commercially, all I want is an attribution. If you make some money off of it, I want to make some money too. This whole show is licensed Creative Commons, non-commercial, attribution required. That's it. You can use any piece or part of it that you want in any way, including my brilliant business ideas. All right. Truly, you would pay $100 a month for this service right now, wouldn't you? You'd probably even pay $500 a month.
Well, maybe, but I just don't think it's possible.
I think
it's funny to joke about, but I don't think it would really fly.
I think technologically it's feasible. That's all I'm saying. Whether or not you could build a business model around it, I don't know. We'll just leave my business acumen out of this.
It might even be illegal. It could be deceiving people as a business model might be not allowed.
Dude, there are business services that make up alibis for you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How naive am I?
Yeah. I mean, you can pay people to, like, I mean, you can buy stuff that, like, to spray on that makes you smell like you've been at the gym. You know, so if you're off banging your mistress, you know, you stop on your way home, you pull out this bottle of, you know, smells like gym shorts.
Right.
You know, spray it all over yourself, you know, and then go home.
Alibi.
Yeah. You no longer smell like sex. You smell like, you know, gym.
That's cool.
And your wife says, oh. You've been at the gym.
Cool.
Okay, but if you're doing that, you're going to hell anyway, so I believe in that, but, you know, damn, I just went down a rat hole. Let's walk away from that and as fast as we can.
Lest your wife listens.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, how about Macworld?
Macworld. So, Macworld, well, let's start with CES, CES being the oldest. Did you see anything at all was interesting at CES?
I didn't really pay a lot of attention to it, I've been to a CES before, and it's an interesting show, I suppose, but it seems like CES is going in a direction that it used to not really go in. You know, it seems like it's getting more into gaming, and there were gaming announcements that were there. I mean, that just, last time I went to one, that wasn't really the case at all. It was more about small little gadgets and this, that, and the other. And lots of things like CD cases and holders and dumb crap like that. But nevertheless, no, I didn't really see a whole lot that I thought was too fascinating.
Yeah, there was only one announcement that I saw that actually kind of tickled my fancy, that Sony is putting out an electronic paper kind of book reader.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that. And it's real small and thin and uses the particular new technology, something about electronic.
It's electronic electronic ink.
Yeah.
And the idea being that unlike your screen, which is constantly drawing power to refresh itself.
Right.
It only draws power
to change itself.
Yeah. So that if you update a page, you can leave that page on the screen for years, and it's not drawing any energy from the battery.
Yeah,
and the battery will wind down by itself over time.
That's a great concept, but I personally need a page to read anything.
But I mean,
until it's flexible and I can stack hundreds of them together like a book is today. I don't think I'd use it.
Okay. My problem is not... I kind of find it intriguing. I'm going to be really interested to see it. But my problem is that it comes from Sony.
Oh, come on. Who cares?
Now, Sony products have uniformly screwed me over time. The most recent...
You're buying the wrong
what
Sony
was Star Wars Galaxies.
All right. Well, that was... They just managed it. They didn't really...
But every Sony product... almost every Sony product that I've owned, especially the high-end ones, over time they fall short. I got this really tiny Sony Vaio when I was working at the Evil Empire. 3.5 pounds, carted it all over the world. It was a great little Windows laptop. But I was stuck with the OS that it came with because after about 6 months, they never did another driver update.
Yeah, they're infamously bad in that regard, but they have gotten a lot better.
But it goes back. Like I had this big, my first surround sound receiver was a big Sony, you know, monster of a receiver. It cost me like $800.
Okay.
Which is mid-range.
Mid-range, yeah. Consumer.
Consumer
sure.
level for that. The manual was about an inch thick.
Okay.
Okay, and about 85% of that was all in Japanese.
Okay.
And there's just pages and pages and pages of Japanese.
All right.
Every other language on the planet got about 6 pages.
Who reads the manual?
Dude, there were 800 different settings on that thing. There were sound fields and all sorts of other shit.
Nobody plays with that stuff.
But I wanted to.
Oh,
and even at, well, for years, there was no online manual. They finally got around to putting their shit on their manuals online. You could tell it's like the manual is almost nearly an inch thick in Japanese, but in American English, you get 6 pages on how to plug it in, and after that, not for you, round eyes.
Yeah,
this is what they say to me all the time. It's like
I've never had a problem. I've had several Sony products. I'm not saying they're the best. I consider myself somewhat of a.
I think they've gone downhill.
Well, I mean, look at
in the last 10 years, just extremely downhill in the last 10 years.
Look at that new SXRD manufacturing process. I mean, that's a phenomenal projection mechanism. A phenomenal. I mean, it's an OLED or LCOS implementation. I can't remember which one. But it's 1080 progressive, so 1920 by 1080 native resolution with something like
1080p?
1080p with something like 10,000 to 1 contrast ratio for $3,500 at 50 inches.
But I mean, I'm telling you,
tough to beat.
Even if you buy that thing,
there's
going to be some little thing that you're expecting that if it does this beautiful screen that, oh, I don't know, maybe you can turn it off or something. And they're going to say, not for you, round eyes.
Well,
there's going to be something quirk that's going to piss you off.
I would argue that every electronics product will have some little quirk to piss you off. I mean,
like I replaced the Sony with a Yamaha.
Okay.
Okay. I actually bought it from the high-end stereo place opposed to Best Buy.
Yamaha makes a respectable product.
The thing was, it's like the $800 receiver is the low-end one at the high-end stereo place.
Sure.
But it's a 7.1 receiver, and you can actually do 5.1 and stereo going somewhere else. You can actually split it and do two buses on it.
Sure.
And it has probably 30% more features than the commodity $800 one that you buy at Best Buy.
Mm-hmm.
I hate Best Buy.
Yeah, see, no, I, yeah, well.
But the manual that came was the same for every language, and I sat there. I spent at least a day getting this thing configured.
Well first off, I think you got a couple problems going on here. First, you shouldn't buy an AV receiver from Sony, first off. I don't think that's their core competency. I think Sony's core competency is television and video products. That's just what I believe. I'm not a big fan of their computers. I don't think that's their core competency either. I think you stick with Sony for projectors, front projector. I mean, look at the Qualia front projector in the new VW100. It's a 1080 progressive front projector. It's also uses that SXRD process, but it's fantastic. I mean, $10,000 yields you a 1080 progressive 150-inch front projected screen. At 10,000 to 1 contrast. I mean, how can you beat that? That's fantastic.
That sounds pretty damn awesome.
There's no 1080 progressive front projector for under 10 grand that exists today that I know of, other than that particular product. So I think Sony can be benefited from pushing prices down. I think I like the company.
The problem I have is even if they're still good in their core competences of video projection and, you know, TVs, they've gone into all of these other businesses that they just suck ass at.
Well,
don't even get me started on my digital recorder.
Oh,
my
really?
Digital
they
video
are,
recorder.
They are in a lot of markets. I mean, they definitely have spread themselves out. But you know, who knows?
All right. Well, on that note, we're gonna take a break from bashing Sony and play a promo.
Good news, everyone. Several years ago, I tried to log on to AOL, and it just went through. We're online.
In the last episode of The Radio Adventures of Dr. Floyd, evil Dr. Steve and his sock-shaped assistant Fidget were plotting ways to do in their arch-nemesis and our hero, Dr. Floyd.
Fidget, that Radio Adventures of Dr. Floyd show has become too popular and too family-friendly. Once we use this Trojan horse on their computer system, it'll ruin DrFloyd.com for good. Of course it'll work. Now help me load it.
Now let's catch up with our heroes, Dr. Floyd, Dr. Grant, and their robot companion Chips, who are currently hurtling through the time and space stream.
Golly, Dr. Floyd, I've just finished uploading the latest episode of our show to DrFloyd.com so people can download it for free.
That's great, Dr. Grant.
Chips says that Dr. Steve has recently been researching Trojan horses.
He must be planning an attack on our website. Hand me the antivirus disc.
Here you go.
Now hand me the anti-spyware disc.
Got it.
Now hand me the anti-inflammatory cream.
What's that for?
My back hurts.
Okay, the computer is updated.
All right, now watch for any signs of Trojan horse attacks.
I'll get it. Hey, there's a big wooden horse out here.
Hello, I'm the Trojan horse.
Problem solved.
Tune in to the Radio Adventures of Dr. Floyd at drfloyd.com. That's DrFloyd.com. Guaranteed Trojan horse free.
Hello, children. Are you ready to have fun today?
Oh, it's time for some swearing and it's time for some fun. It's time for some essays, so let's get begun. It's time for something that certainly isn't hip, where all the nerds hang out at Geek Foo Action Grip. Oh, grip. Everybody who listens to this podcast needs to get a grip.
This is a podcast where you'll hear a mother.
Damn it, I am the mother here!
A fangirl.
I've wanted you from long ago.
A geek.
I am mighty!
A gamer.
I want to cast magic missile.
And a writer.
Mistaken identities, shipwreck, pirate king, a bit with a dog, and love triumphant.
Talk about, well, whatever the hell comes to her mind, and read various geeky essays, often discussing things like the homoerotic dance of the frat boy, the various geek crushes that people get, anywhere from Will Wheaton to the former host of Blue's Clues, Steve Burns.
Will you help me?
Very odd stories from a geeky childhood, and simple delusions of grandeur.
When the world is mine, your death shall be quick and painless.
If you like David Sedaris and Sarah Vowell, but you think they need a geekier edge, then you should listen to my podcast. Geek Foo Action Grip, geekfooactiongrip.com. Other action figures sold separately. A proud member of the Science Fiction Podcast Network at tsfpn.com.
Say something, anything.
Test 1, 2, 3.
Anything but that.
So back on to Macworld.
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 Intel Macintoshes have been released upon, well, I would say an unsuspecting public, but that would be a bald-faced lie.
Right. Well, I'm a big fan of the Pentium M, personally. Yeah. I think it's a fantastic processor. I think the dual core is just the best really gets better as far as Intel's product line. It's great. I think it's a great processor to put inside the Mac.
So what do you think about the new MacBook Pro?
I think it's got everything but a good display. Not very impressed with its resolution.
1440 by 900 is just not enough real estate for you.
It's not 1080 progressive. And any notebook that claims to be A, high-end, and B, how should I say, multimedia-centric should be capable of a 1080 progressive image. And it's not.
Well, I was actually a little disappointed in the screen myself because the previous version of the PowerBook does 1440 by, I think it's either 960 or 980.
Okay.
So they actually narrowed the screen a little bit.
Well, besides, it's a slap in the face as far as I'm concerned. It's a bad, I mean, I can buy a Dell for $1,500 with a 1080 progressive screen. Matter of fact, better, a 1920 by 1200 screen. It's $1,500. I mean, what are they trying to sell me? You know what I mean? Some great high-end notebook? I don't think so. It's not that great in high-end. Now, I do think they put a good video card in it, or options to have good video cards, which is a first.
Okay.
It's about time.
Well, you're assuming that what you're paying for is just all hardware, because when you get a box from Dell, basically All you're paying for software wise in the base kit
is Windows
and a whole bunch of really low end crap that you don't want on your machine.
I could care less about that.
But you get with the Mac, you get the operating system, you get some of the best multimedia products on the planet.
But again, I could care less about that. I'm not a professional anything of the products that the Mac comes with. So if I'm going to use them on a PC, I'll pirate them. I don't care. If I were making money or doing work, doing whatever, writing music, then maybe I'd need to purchase a piece of software, but I'm not. So if I'm going to do any of that stuff, I'm going to tinker, and I'm not going to pay for it anyway.
See, my take on this thing is if I'm going to pirate, I'm going to if I find myself using the software package, then I owe it to the people that make their living off of it to actually buy it.
And I would agree, but I don't find myself using anything other than games.
So if you pirate something, then maybe you tinker around with it for a couple of days, a couple of weeks, and then it's gone.
Or make a DVD a year or whatever. I mean, really, I'm not a big user of computers, so I just don't find software to be a compelling reason. I'm sure some people do. But aside from all that, we're talking about the hardware. That's what you're really buying.
Oh, that's right. You work on Windows, so you have to spend most of your time defragging it, removing viruses, and removing spyware. And, after that, you just have no time to do anything creative.
I'm out of time. But really, when you buy a computer, you're buying the hardware. You can say it comes with the software load all you want. That's fine.
Okay.
But the fact of the matter is that Dell equips their notebooks better than Apple does for less money. End of story. It's a better product. It has the same processor now. It's got, all the same ingredients. It's a better notebook. I'll hack OS X and run it on my Dell before I'd buy that book. I mean, why wouldn't you? It's cheaper. You can still run OS X, and it's better.
See,
it's not as sexy. It's not as cool looking. See, I agree.
I grew up with mechanics in my family.
Mm-hmm.
My grandfather was a mechanic and owned a gas station. My uncle was a mechanic. My cousin was a mechanic. And the one thing that they beat into me when I was a kid was that you don't buy a car in its first model year.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of computers, I think you don't buy a computer, at least me personally, you don't buy a computer, on its first release. Well, you give it 3 or 6 months for them to figure out what they missed.
I agree, but I have a feeling you're going to find that 1080 progressive screen on the 17-inch book that ends up coming out because Apple wants you to buy up to their 17-inch model in order to have that screen. But now, me, personally, I like a 15-inch display.
See,
smaller
I'm not
footprint.
So hung up on having a 1080p display.
I am.
It really, my eyes, I do Photoshop work, I actually like to kick the screen back to a slightly lower resolution sometimes, just so I can, actually sit back at a relaxed distance, like have the laptop on, on the desk 2 or 3 feet away from me,
mm-hmm.
and be stretched out and more relaxed and doing my work.
You just need more megapixels.
Then just have it right up in my face.
More megapixels. More data comprises larger pixel array
Yeah, I know, but it it lets people do shit like put, four-point type in a display, and I can't see that.
Here's the fact of the matter, though. The physical capabilities of the screen and the resolution of the screen have really nothing to do with how large or small the fonts and windows and things are on the screen. You can set large windows and fonts for a high-resolution array. You're not limited to that. So why wouldn't you want a higher native capability of your screen? When Blu-ray and HD DVD start coming out and Apple's claim to be all up on top of that too, that notebook will never be able to play a 1080 progressive Blu-ray disc. It just won't be able to do it. But it's supposed to be a DVD player.
I'm not holding my breath for that war to be over anytime soon.
And never mind Blu-ray and HD DVD. What about content sourced on a PC? What about a 1080 progressive Terminator 2 disc that comes with WMV HD that you can actually watch it in 1080 progressive? Streaming it locally. I mean, you can source 1080 progressive from a PC. I mean, all that's fine and dandy. I find it to be an extremely important feature.
I agree with you that the world is moving toward 1080p for content, But I don't think that it's an immediate thing that it's going to happen anytime soon.
But
I think we're at least a year off before it gains traction.
Okay.
with Joe User.
But let's understand the company we're analyzing. We're talking about a product from a company who builds itself upon this reputation that they offer the cream of the crop, especially concerning multimedia.
Right.
And they don't. It's a misconception
because they don't support 1080p.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well,
high resolution displays on a
1080p
notebook.
Is about one of a thousand things you
Let's
need to
not
be
call
able
it 1080p.
Do.
Let's call it 1920 by 1200, which is what it is. Let's call it a 16 by 10 high resolution image that just happens to have enough pixels to support 1080p. Why wouldn't you want more pixels on your damn high end notebook? It blows me away. Whatever. I focus in on that because there's no reason why it should not have it, as an option at least.
Well, I think there's a lot of good things to be said about the MacBook Pro and...
What?
I don't know what.
What does it do that moves the notebook industry forward in any way, shape, or form? And, okay, the little power magnetic quick thing... I'll give you that. That's kind of cool.
The magnetic release on the power cord.
The underlit keyboard is cool.
A lot of the stuff that's on it is old, but it was released first on the Macintoshes.
Agree.
On the PowerBooks.
I know.
Okay, but you know they've gone to optical audio for input and output. You know.
All right.
And of course they do this literally the day after I buy a FireWire mixer.
Of course.
So, you know, instead of going for an optical mixer, I went FireWire, and now they're going optical.
So is it like a TOSLink connection? What is the optical? Coax?
It's digital? Optical. It's fiber.
It's TOSLink, so it's a little square fiber connection.
I don't know. I haven't looked at it.
Probably.
To see what connector is on it, but it's fiber. It's optical.
Okay.
And it's for input and output.
Yeah, that's great. Now,
I've seen a couple other laptops, I believe, that have had that in the past.
Possibly. But that's for a standard feature. That's but the kind of crap I'm talking about.
Let me ask you a question. Percentage-wise, the models that are available on the market right now, how many of them support 1080p for a screen? Because you're hawking this one Dell the reason to invalidate Apple's entire product line.
It's not one Dell. It's any high-end notebook is going to give you a 1920 by 1200 screen. I can't think of any notebook that claims itself to be a ultra-performance or gaming.
It's less than 10% of the current notebook models that are shipping today.
I would say about 10%, because you got to look at all the manufacturers have, like Dell has their XPS, their Inspiron 9300s. You have, you know, these other gaming / high performance notebooks, and most of your clone builds of notebooks are going to offer a 1920 by 1200 screen. The point is, it's not that it's that important. It's that if it's billed and built as such a multimedia monster from Apple that only puts the best crap in their machines, and I'm going to have Apple zealots in my face telling me how great the machine is, why doesn't it have a 1920 by 1200 screen?
But that's one thing, and you're completely letting out the fact that the applications that come with it are extremely valuable, and they actually are... They're very valuable to me, and I am not, you know, a media professional. I am a media amateur.
Right.
So,
I mean, it's a great notebook. You know, it's shtick that I put on, of course, talking about how much I hate Apples and all this crap. I mean, I don't hate them. I've tried multiple times in my life, probably three or even four, to completely transfer all of my computing to a Macintosh, with the exception of games. I've tried many times. I don't like OS X. I'm sure it's gotten better, but it just was missing the little things, and it's probably becoming more polished.
I don't see it as missing anything right now except for Vizio, and I have a program that does what Vizio does for me.
It was the little things interface wise. I don't even want to bring up specific examples because I'm sure they've all been addressed now. Like at one point in OS X's history, if you had a window that wasn't the primary front window, it was like behind something, you had to click on it twice, once to activate the window and once to grab it. It was little things like that.
Okay.
I'm sure that's been fixed. You can grab a window now that sits in the background and you'll pick it right up.
Yeah.
But that was not the case early on in OS X, and it would drive me crazy.
Okay.
Little things like
that. Let me just follow on with that. You got time for a couple more minutes?
Yeah.
Because I've been playing with this Sprint PPC 6700
phone. Beautiful. Yeah.
Have you actually gotten your hands on it?
Oh, I've used it. It's a fantastic phone.
I cannot
phone.
Understand how anyone on the planet uses Windows Mobile 5.0.
Really? Oh, really. I find it an awesome phone.
The interface on it is completely inconsistent.
How?
Well, let's just talk about the menu button for the application that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
The apps built into this phone, the settings, the things that are built into the OS,
mm-hmm.
one setting screen, the menu button is on the bottom right. The next setting screen, the menu button is on the bottom left. The next setting screen, the menu button is on the top right. Well,
yeah, I don't know. I mean, tinkered with the phone. My phone right here in my pocket happens to be a Windows smartphone, but it is not 2005.
Okay.
And as you can tell... I don't know if you can tell this stuff, but all of the programs have their menu buttons, you know, in the same place.
Well,
they're always in the bottom left, you know.
Well, I can tell you this, that the version of the phone that I've got, that I'm playing with from Sprint.
The one that slides out like this?
Yeah. It's if you hold it sideways.
It slides out like, bottom, yeah.
What's that? Portrait?
It's portrait, yeah.
That's landscape.
Landscape.
You hold it in landscape mode. The keyboard slides down on it. The keyboard is extremely cumbersome to use.
Yeah,
I think the thumb pad that you have on your phone is actually easier to use.
I'll tell you why my phone is better, just from what I've observed.
Yeah,
I prefer the landscaping slide as opposed to the portrait slide.
So,
like this
which phone is that for people who are listening?
It's the Samsung i730. It's an EVDO. Compliant Verizon Windows smartphone. But nevertheless, if you look at that Sanyo or whoever makes it, I think it's Audiovox makes the phone.
Yeah.
The one that you're referring to, it has no hard button numeric keypad on the phone.
No, it's got that membrane Atari 400 membrane keyboard.
Well, I don't have a big problem with the keyboard, but the number keys are 1 through 0 at the top, whereas if I want to dial a phone number, I have to use this. I have to use the touch screen, which is not acceptable to me. I don't like non-tactile response buttons. So I can, in my car, use my thumb and dial a number, you know, one, whatever. But on that thumb one that...
And do they do something smart like they do on the other phones where there's like a little physical raised bump on the 5 key so you can find it with your eyes closed?
Yeah, it's got a little tiny button.
So while you're driving, you could actually, you know, have your eyes on the road and one hand, you can feel where that 5 is and find any other button.
Yeah, this is a surprisingly capable phone because it has 802.11 in it. It has Bluetooth. It's EVDO. It's also, of course, Verizon's whatever, 900 megahertz, whatever their standard is. I can't remember. But it's a great little phone. You know, SD slot. Of course, it runs Windows, so I'm assuming that precludes you from liking it.
You know, I spent the better part of yesterday working with this phone, and I was trying to load a VoIP soft phone onto it.
Mm-hmm.
And I downloaded Skype, installed Skype on the phone. Everything was fine. After that, I tried to download a couple of games, and it would ActiveSync would pop up. A window on my laptop at work, and it would make the frame of the window, but it would never fill in the rest of the window, and it would just hang right there.
Did you update ActiveSync 3.9?
I actually removed 4.0. ActiveSync. 4.0 is what I had. I removed it. I had to manually go in and rip out the rest of it because the add remove programs in Windows doesn't actually remove all of the program. So I had to go in and manually delete every single freaking file that was left after the quote-unquote remove program.
Hmm. Where'd you remove those from? From the ActiveSync directory?
The program files, Microsoft ActiveSync directory.
So you removed the ones that were there before?
I removed 4.0.
Well, no, see, here's the deal.
Okay. And then I downloaded 4.1, which is the latest version.
Okay.
Okay. And I had a reboot after that. Okay, so then it came up. I dropped the phone into the cradle. It said, new hardware found. And I had a reboot after that. And then literally I rebooted the PC like 6 more times, farting around trying to get this thing to work. And I actually had to pop the battery out of the phone and reseat it before it would make a connection with ActiveSync again. I wasted a good 3 hours just troubleshooting this thing, trying to get the soft phone installed. And even now, I can't do add remove programs in ActiveSync. to load software onto the PDA.
Mm-hmm.
I can sync files, so I can sync the CAB file.
You mean you can't install programs through ActiveSync?
No.
What do you Mac users do to your Windows box? I mean, I swear to God, it's amazing these stories that I hear, because I just don't have these kinds of problems at all. How do you do this to your machine? I mean, it should work pretty seamlessly. I'll admit that ActiveSync has never been the best. It still sucks.
It's very, very quirky. It's like it was working, and then, you know, there's no way to eject the laptop, so I just, you know, disconnect it from the cradle.
No way to eject the laptop?
You know, like in Windows, you have a way of saying...
Yeah, right down on, if you're in a docked profile, there should be an eject button.
For the
notebook.
Not for the notebook, for the PDA.
Oh, well, you don't need to eject, you just pull it out.
Okay, well, that's what I did, is like, I'd pull it out, and then it'd stop syncing.
Well, of course.
And then I'd have to, no, I mean, when I stick it back in the cradle.
Yeah. Oh, it would
never sync again until I yanked the battery on the phone.
I don't know what you're doing, man. And put it back in. I bet you give me that thing, I'll bring it to my house, it'll fire right up. Not a problem. Is it your phone?
No.
Can you bring it home?
It is home. It's here.
It's here?
It's here. It's downstairs.
Let me borrow that joint. I'll bring it to
I got it. I got it. My confused ass is on didn't realize when Martin Luther King Day was. So I'm going to be at the customer site, the customer that owns the phone.
Oh, okay.
On Monday.
Oh, okay.
And since they are a city... they are not going to be at work.
Right, exactly.
So imagine this. I managed to give myself a day of free bird watching.
While you're waiting.
While I'm waiting.
Well, that phone is nice, A, because it's EVDO on Sprint. That's cool. It's the first EVDO phone.
I'm liking the EVDO, but I actually tried Skype over EVDO, and not so much.
Hmm. Oh, well.
But I think that's more the EVDO is a large packet, kind of high latency network.
Yes.
Not really optimized
for streaming
for voice over IP.
Right.
And some shit that I'm aware of that the general public is not allowed to know, that's going to change.
Really?
I can't give a time frame. I can't tell you specifics.
What, the EVDO stuff's going to change?
The carrier networks are changing to adopt an infrastructure that will be more tolerant of both VoIP in general,
okay,
and more specifically SIP.
Cool.
And you know my feelings about, you know, SIP as a promise, the promise of SIP technology,
mm-hmm,
where you pick how you want to receive information,
mm-hmm,
and I pick how I want to send it to you,
mm-hmm,
and SIP does the interchange in the middle. So, you know, if you're at the beach and you don't want to be bothered with anything, you can choose to receive your voicemail. You can choose to receive everything as a fax.
Right.
So if I want to send voice, there's a translator in the middle that will do voice to text and then convert it to a fax.
Remember when we used to talk about this at the Evil Empire?
I know, but it's coming true. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Shangri-La of communication management.
I know, but the 800-pound gorillas, the carriers,
mm-hmm, the evil empires
of this world are finally getting there. That's the thing that just really blows my socks off.
The thing I find cool about this phone is I can connect via EVDO, and then I can run a terminal client and remote control any Windows host from the screen and actually browse around the screen and manipulate a machine remotely. Now, it's a little bit of a pain given the 320x200, you know, whatever the resolution is.
Right.
But it's cool in a pinch. So in my job, if I need to do something remotely, I can do it wherever I have EVDO coverage.
Right. And I've got the same thing on this Sprint PPC 6700.
Yeah. That's a cool that's pretty cool. Especially if you have to manage or mess with or do anything with any Windows host.
Yeah. So, you know, the thing that I'm seeing is that the promise is getting there, but I got to tell you, you know, I'm an old Palm desktop guy and Palm operating system. I liked my Linux PDA when I had it.
What about the new Treo Windows phone?
What
would you think of Treo Palm applications written for mobile Windows?
See, I like the concept of it, but I just got like a Motorola Razr, and I look at the Sprint PPC, mm-hmm. and I look at the phone you have, and I look at the Trio.
They're all way big.
They're fucking huge.
Yeah,
you could let me see that phone.
It's big.
I could do.
Okay.
Not quite bench press it, but I could do curls with this thing.
Here's the assumption. Before you buy this phone, you carried two devices that were bigger.
Right.
So now that you have one device that is smaller, I am happy that it's this small. But if you're coming from a perspective of having a Razer and going, do I want to buy a PowerPC phone, that's not a valid comparison. You need to be lugging a Palm around with your Razer.
Generally speaking, I despise Motorola. But I got to tell you, this Razer cell phone...
It's a great phone.
It kicks ass. Like last night when you sent me your cell phone number, I didn't know where my cell phone was, but I plugged your number into the Mac. I hit sync. My phone was like 40 feet away from me. Bluetooth sync, automatically. I found the phone later.
But they all do that now. I mean, all Bluetooth phones are going to
hit. Well, no, because it's the compatibility between the computer database... and the phone database. The last phone I had was a Nokia.
Like a Windows phone in a Windows operating system. It's definitely pretty compatible. Works fine.
Except if when you go add remove programs, the window comes up and never finishes painting.
You got some other problem going on.
You know, it's a corporate lockdown machine, and I really would not be surprised.
There's your problem.
But the thing is, Skype installed, no problem, first time.
I mean, for all I know, ActiveSync could use .NET framework. Do you have the latest .NET framework installed?
I have whatever. I mean, I have local admin.
Right.
But they actually block people from connecting directly to Microsoft Windows Update. So I don't know if I have the latest.
Then that's part of your problem. I mean, that's the framework. If you have an application written in the framework and you're running an old version of the framework, how is it supposed to work?
These guys update the machines pretty often.
Yeah, but some companies are weird about some of these Microsoft things. For whatever reason, there's a lot of misconception on what .NET is a lot of administrators.
Well, when .NET first came out, it was basically like, give us all your personal information, and oh, by the way, once you give it to us, the license said they owned my personal information. That's what the license... Dude, I read the fucking license. Anything you put into .NET gets owned by Microsoft.
That's ridiculous, because applications are made for the framework .NET. So you're telling me if I'm... Cakewalk Professional, and I make a piece of software for a Windows box in the .NET framework that Microsoft now owns Cakewalk Professional?
Any data that actually goes into the .NET, when it first came out...
I'm
confusing it with the wallet, which was the original thing for .NET.
I don't know.
Microsoft wallet, which
.NET is a core set of APIs. It's like saying any application I write for DirectX is owned by Microsoft. I mean,
I'm talking about the actual data that you put into it, not program code.
If I
put in my phone and address and social security number and my bank accounts and my PIN numbers, Microsoft owns that information.
All right, well, whatever. I don't read those. I you know what happens when I get to one of those? I hit accept. The first thing I do, accept the license. No problem. Because I'm not paranoid at all, and they're not going to own shit is what's going to come down to.
Dude, if you ever wind up in court, they're going to bend you over and rape you in the ass.
Oh, come on.
No, because literally, you are agreeing to this shit, and this shit does hold up in court.
But I'm just a user. I just use these programs. You know what I mean? Lightly at best. I don't have all these paranoias of all these license agreements.
Do you trust anyone with your credit information, your bank account numbers, your PINs, all that stuff
online? I don't concern myself with it. Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. If I go to Amazon and buy something, sure thing, I'll store my credit information. Not a problem. No problem.
Okay.
I mean, would you?
With Amazon, yes.
Okay. I'm not saying Joe's bongs.com. I'm going to...
You know, with 40-something street photo in New York?
Probably not. I'm with you on that. But there are people that are overly cautious about identity theft and that kind of stuff and people having their private information.
Yeah.
I'm the opposite of that.
Biggest source of identity theft?
I don't know.
Trash picking.
I was going to say picking
dumpster
up trash.
Diving.
Yeah, see, you do things on the internet. There's no paper trail, so to speak, that you directly create. So, well, I mean, I guess somewhere you do, but hopefully it's in some place that's relatively secure. But I'm a not paranoid person. So, for example, I got, say I have an FTP server with some music on it.
Just say
I do. I'll leave that sucker wide open. You want my music? Come get it. I don't care. If you want to look around my crap, I don't care. So what do I have that I would care about?
So if the RIAA scans
your... I bought every one of them.
Your disk, but you're sharing them.
No, I'm not.
If it's on an FTP server, you are sharing them.
No, I said say I do.
In this hypothetical situation.
Oh, well, if I was actually sharing them for people.
If you were actually sharing them.
Then I would
didn't announce it, you didn't tell anyone. Sure. The server is there. Anyone who wants to can anonymously log in. If someone
I would realistically fall back to I don't care. Because okay. I don't believe I'm going to be busted for having an FTP site with
the 7,000 people that they've sued. You look at that number and say there's 100 million households in this country. There's 400 million people.
400 million people.
And they've sent out 7,000 subpoenas.
Yeah.
Odds are
pretty low.
Pretty low.
And if it does just happen to fall on you, oh well. Guess I got to pay, what is it, $1,000?
Oh no.
$2,000?
It really depends on how much music you have out there.
Okay.
But they're hitting basically they're saying, how much money do you have and give it to us?
That's what. No, they're not.
Yeah. Yes.
No.
Yes, they are.
I don't believe this.
I'll put a link in the show notes. I'll send you the link to the story. Lawrence Lessig covered it in his book, Free Culture.
Again, I don't care. Not that I don't care about these people, because that's awful, but I do not believe that if I had an FTP server, then anyone's going to care and kind of going to come send me a subpoena.
Okay. One last thing, and then we're out of here. Coldplay released a CD last week that has a usage license on, basically on the artwork. It says you cannot use this in a digital music player. You cannot use that. You cannot listen to this CD on your computer.
Right.
What do you think of that?
Well, first off, I would never buy a Coldplay album. First off. Secondly, I don't buy media. I'm against it. So I would never buy their stupid piece of plastic. They can keep it. And thirdly, if they don't have it available in a digital format, in a non-lossy format, or at least 320 MP3, something very high quality, they're not getting my money. And I will pirate it. End of story.
And to summarize that, I don't listen to their shit anyway, but if I did, I wouldn't buy it after this this little trick, and they can kiss my ass.
Yeah, no, I agree. And until these online sites like iTunes Crap House start supporting high-quality music as opposed to the shit they pawn off now, they can keep their music. Keep it. I don't want it. I'm not going to pay an overpriced fee for your shitty quality music, as far as I'm concerned.
See, that doesn't bother me so much, because I typically listen to my music in a noisy environment.
F them. They can keep their 99 cents a song. It's just insanity that they would charge you money for a piece of shit compared to what you can buy in the store.
Well, 128K AAC is roughly 256K MP3.
Still so not 320.
It's not 320. It's not up to your standards, so you say, kiss my ass.
Absolutely. And whenever they do, I'll start buying music online.
All right. And that'll wrap it up for this Techno Testosticast edition, number 13 of the ADD cast. We are out of here. This show is licensed under Creative Commons non-commercial attribution required license. If you want to get in touch with us, you can reach us by email at addcast@gmail.com. And we are in the process of updating the website. Hopefully we will have a dynamic content site soon that you will be able to leave comments on. But for right now, the only place you can get back in touch with us is through email. So let's keep those emails coming. And we'll be talking about those on the next show. And let's see, our intro music was composed by Audrey Fisher. And our exit music today will be the second to last track that we will be playing you from Bottomland's fantastic CD, Feet of Clay. This track is called You Will Always Come to Mind. And without further ado, here is Bottomland. Thank you.
Come to my